Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
March 16, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar, and this indeed is the show you were looking for. How do I know this? Because you're hearing me say just this. Anyways, it is Wednesday, Woden's Day, the middle of the week, and this is where we go way off topic usually, and it's a good thing to do. Although, this might actually be more on topic than other Wednesdays have been. All right. I've really tried to avoid discussing the COVID reality because it seems to have toned down just a bit for some of us. We're not being confronted with the same lockdowns that we were. We're not being confronted with the same mask mandates that we were. Of course, I live in Georgia. I know you can tell from my accent, right? Anyway, I live in Georgia, and it has been a mixed experience here the entire time the past couple of years. But, you know, your experiences may vary in different parts of what we used to call America. And I've got somebody with me tonight that is going to discuss, at least in the first hour, we're going to discuss a part of what I describe as the medical tyranny, but also what is a clearly, plainly social engineering one way or another. And over an invisible enemy, yet again. All right. So, who is she? Which, first of all, I'm glad that we have a female voice on the show, because they've been hard to book lately, I gotta tell you. I don't know why, but here it is, and I'm really, really glad, first, but that we have a female voice, but secondly, we got a good one. Registered nurse, yes, by trade, but active in a lot of other ways, Nicole Landers. Now, the interesting thing about this is I've already shared an article in the chat room, and I will include it with the show notes, which does have a podcast attached to it and is part of an organization that Nicole also works for. And I think I'm going to let her explain everything and put herself in context. In the second hour, our friend Captain Trips is going to join us, who is also in the medical field. And you know what? We're going to talk about how this is affecting people, well, in the practice of medicine, which I'm kind of skeptical of to begin with, always have been. But Captain Trips is a guy I've come to trust and know. Of course, we give him that name because we don't want to share his name, not to affect him professionally. Okay. And but Nicole Landers, well, I'm assuming that's your real name, so you're out there out front and making statements, but maybe not everybody with an RN, an LPN, whatever is willing to do this, and yet you're all being confronted by the same issues in this new post-COVID or current COVID, I don't know, reality that we're facing. So first of all, Nicole, how are you tonight?
Doing great, Chuck. Thanks so much for having me.
Look, I'm really grateful that we could get somebody like you who is willing to explore this and discuss, I got to be honest, something that I've objected to from the beginning. And really, it's been put aside in the major headlines, let's say, in the news media at the moment. However, I fear it's about to rear its ugly head again. And, you know, the confusion with the CDC and the debates over what Fauci has to say and Robert F. Kennedy's book. And, man, there are a lot of areas that we could go into here where I am, A, not sympathetic to the medical establishment, and, B, not sympathetic to the government arm of the medical establishment. But there are people here that are involved in doing this, and I'm extremely sympathetic to those who are being, well, forced to be vaccinated despite the fact that they have different objections. You know, the different rulings that have come down, maybe, just maybe, not everybody can be forced vaccinated for their profession unless you're in the medical field. And I'm willing to bet you have a few things to say about this, Nicole. So where should we begin covering this? I mean, by profession, again, you have an RN, you have another degree, I think, which I took note of. But tell me about that. Tell everybody who you are and how you come into this equation personally, please.
Sure. So I am an RN. I have a BSN and a second bachelor's in clinical psychology. I also am a nationally certified case manager and a legal nurse consultant. I've been a nurse for almost 30 years, and I've worked in a lot of different capacities. My last capacity in mainstream medicine was as a case manager in a major health organization in Baltimore. How I got into the role I'm in today, which is as the nurse advisor for Truth for Health Foundation, is that when the vaccines began to roll out, I watched more and more. We can't say they're absolutely definitively vaccine injuries, but process of intelligence and evaluation and lots of medical experience made me very certain I was seeing about a third of my patients suffer vaccine impacts ranging anywhere from loss of sensation all the way to death. Mm-hmm. It was so shocking and so appalling to me that I began speaking out publicly, and I had a video that went viral. And when the vaccine mandates rolled around to my organization, they said that I would take a shot or be fired, or that I could apply for a medical exemption and be considered. And I basically told them there was not even a chance that I would ask permission to not take an experimental shot, and I resigned.
Mm. Well, let's put this in context again, since you have a 30-year experience, right, in the field in the past, and I only know this because I'm not a medical practitioner. However, wives, girlfriends have often been in the medical field, okay? And quite frankly, so I knew this by being their partner. They were often forced to take things like the flu shot and other vaccinations. You hear me sighing already, right? In order to keep their jobs, different times. And I'm talking about everything from a nurse's aide who effectively in the hospital was, you know, basically emptying garbage and cleaning up messes, okay, because that's what she was doing. You know, all the way to, yeah, an RN, an EMT, LPN, you name it. And if they're working with people, they wind up compelling them one way or another, regardless of religious status or even medical exemption. They've often been compelled to take different things. Now, this has been standard operating procedure and something that hasn't caught a lot of attention in my mind among the general public for decades. Am I misrepresenting something here?
No, you're not. Now, the reality is that there's always been legal means to request exemptions from other medical treatments, other vaccinations, but it isn't well known. And frankly, the medical community is responsible because they should have been standing their ground years ago. Mm-hmm. It's a major fault of the medical system, along with so many others. But there were always provision if you were so inclined to investigate and know your, I guess you could call it a right. I mean, when should we ever have to ask an employer for permission not to take a medical treatment?
Mm. Well, and see, here's the debate, right? Back then, it was a matter of safety for the individuals that you're working with. And if indeed that was the case, then it became sort of a gray area in my mind. You know, even if you worked with the public, say, in a retail establishment, you weren't generally forced or compelled to be vaccinated in the past, you know, and so on and so forth. And I've been in two different lives here regarding this, because just general vaccination, just so you know, I was with it at one point until I saw my, about 20 years ago, I saw my second child damaged. And even though I cannot prove that and can't get myself into one of those special courts or anything else, I stand by that assertion. I saw him develop a whole bunch of allergies and nearly starve to death as a baby after his big round of vaccinations because he couldn't hold down food and couldn't hold down formula and stuff like this. And it turns out that he had developed an allergy to a particular protein and really became a miserable child and had all kinds of things go on after this round of vaccinations. When we took him home, he was perfectly healthy. And again, that was like 2002. So, you know, for me, I changed my mind, and it took me a long time to say I'm not on board with this. Now, let's put that aside, because to me, this is a new issue. And why is it a new issue? Because in the past, yeah, you might have been able to seek an exemption based on religion, based on, you know, medical circumstance. One of the women that I was with was a diabetic. So there were certain things that she couldn't be compelled to take because it would have been harmful to her as a diabetic, right? And that's the way it would go. And it wasn't easy. It wasn't something that they advertised to you, but if you knew how to investigate it, go through things, and even your unions, whatever, they might assist you in asserting your right to simply not have your body invaded by a chemical that you do not wish to have in your body, right? And to me, it's that simple. However, these exemptions were made because there was an emergency here and all these things now. And to me, it just became the latest excuse to assert this universal, you know, sort of circumstance where everybody's got to get this shot. And frankly, I found it, you know, horrifying to begin with, because I don't think anybody should be compelled to do anything outside of not harm others. And I don't think you're harming anybody if you're choosing not to be hit with this. And I don't even think it's a vaccine. I'm having trouble even correlating the two things, right? Because of the things I've read about it. So meanwhile, they call people like me conspiracy theorists for bringing up things like VAERS. And that's something that's publicly observable. Help me out here. Am I just, you know, looking for a problem and asserting a problem because I'm just an anti-vax idiot? Also, I'm supposed to be pro-Trump, which I'm not. And, you know, I'm also supposed to be a whole bunch of other things, uneducated and only believing in rumors on the internet, etc., in order to resist this whole thing. But help me out here with this VAERS, and, you know, explain to people how that gets collected and everything, if you don't mind, because I'm sure you had to look at this data, too.
Oh, absolutely. And VAERS has actually been around since 1986, when our lovely Congress granted exemptions to the big pharma vaccine manufacturers for the childhood vaccination schedule. Mm-hmm. Parents are not really able to hold the pharmaceutical companies accountable. There's only a mechanism through the government to even try as a result of this legislation in 1986. And part of the quote unquote safety provision around giving the manufacturers release of liability was the creation of the VAERS database to track and detect warning signs amongst the vaccine administrations. It's been quote unquote good enough for all this time to evaluate for warning signals, but suddenly in the last, you know, 15 months, it's suddenly become an unreliable and trivial tool. I find that fascinating. Mm-hmm. I can tell you I served many years as a pediatric nurse of medically complex children in my lifetime, career-wise, of being a professional. I've never really seen vaccine reactions or adverse events, with the exception of one patient. Although I have developed a growing concern over my years that something is very wrong, as I watched childhood illnesses, cancers, psychological and psychiatric disorders, and particularly autism, become more and more prevalent in simultaneous nature to the increase in the vaccine schedule. We're now up to about 72 vaccines these little ones get. Even still, supposedly the system has been good enough to track for all these years, but in the last 15 months, it's not. I think that's utterly wrong, and reporting to the vaccine adverse events system requires a pretty extensive process of recording lot numbers and medical data and most people don't know, but it's true. It's a federal offense if you falsify a report to the VAERS system. You can be fined or put in jail.
No, fair enough. And I am taking it that you may have some skepticism regarding other vaccinations, but in general, you're not necessarily an anti-vax person. Is that about accurate?
That's true. I'm not an anti-vax person. Mm-hmm. I've received vaccinations. I've elected not to receive the flu vaccine because it's highly ineffective, and I have an objection to fetal cells being used. But my children were vaccinated when they were little, and it's only been in the recent years, as I've paid close attention to what's going on, that I've become skeptical. Mm-hmm. But I'm not anti-vax.
Okay.
I am against the COVID shot, which I agree with you. It does not meet the definition of a vaccine.
Yeah, no, I wanted to clearly differentiate that because some people would say, look, you brought on a nurse who is anti-vax, and I wanted to make sure I actually didn't. And I wanted to show people that as we go forward, just to establish it at the beginning here.
Absolutely. And I still say to anyone, as I am a nurse, I think that taking shots is, you know, between you and God. I'm not anti-vaccine. My children are vaccinated. I'm vaccinated. I do think that the childhood schedule of vaccines is way too aggressive against underdeveloped immune systems, and much more caution should be taken. Where it comes to this injection, it is not a vaccine, and it doesn't meet the definition of a vaccine, and it hasn't been through the rigor of testing. And in fact, to the opposite, we have over 20 years of data that says this is incredibly dangerous. Uh-huh. And destructive to use in any living being, yet alone a human.
Well, what I find interesting here is that even according to one of the biggest developers that is in use in this country anyway, which is Pfizer, even in their literature directly, they state a whole lot of things about this, what shall we call it, this treatment that is, exactly the opposite of what the mainstream media and most medical practitioners that I've encountered have said about it, where they effectively said in their own documentation that we don't believe that this will prevent you from being infected. We don't believe that this prevents transmission. They say that in their own documentation. I find it interesting that, of course, the general consensus for about a year solid across the board was, well, if you don't get this, then you are intentionally infecting others and you are a terrible person. I even watched some of the more liberal media assets out there try and say that even though we don't believe in shaming people, it's okay to shame people who have not taken this because they are literally actively being harmful to society. And I find this outrageous and outlandish. So could you do me a favor?
I'm going to give you a great example of how foolish a statement that is. I have a patient in Arizona right now who suffered a medical imprisonment for a quote-unquote COVID diagnosis that he never actually had. Mm-hmm. He had cancer and a sickness. Post his illness, he went to an acute long-term care facility. In that facility, he contracted COVID from his vaccinated nurses who were allowed to come to work sick with COVID. Mm-hmm. Because they were vaccinated, and they made him sick, and now he's on a ventilator. So the foolishness of anyone who believes a shot that doesn't stop you from catching or spreading, that requires repeated booster shots every couple of months, is doing anything for public health, is terribly deceived.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I'm just, and now I'm going to ask you an open question here where, look, you said that it was not something that you think should even be categorized as a vaccine. I do not disagree with you, but I'm curious, could you explain why you believe this? and why it is that, quite frankly, this is a fact, regardless of what the propaganda is at the moment. And, yeah, it was really interesting to me, though, that they did foreshadow this in the media, that, you know, it could be, folks, that, you know, it's not just the two shots or the one if you went with Johnson & Johnson, right? Which, by the way, trustworthy companies all, because, you know, they never put anything harmful in any of the things that they put out to us, do they? Story for another day, perhaps. But anyway, I wonder why you would say that this does not meet the definition in your mind based on your, well, work in the field, your understanding of medicine, again, as somebody who is qualified in more than one way to perhaps look at these things. I'm curious, how is it that you would explain to somebody that it doesn't meet that definition of a, quote, vaccine, end quote?
Because a vaccine, by definition, is a medical treatment that prevents someone from contracting or spreading a disease. When we think about someone being inoculated against polio or measles, smallpox or varicella, these are medical treatments that inhibit the spread of a disease. That's the definition of a vaccine.
Right.
When a medical treatment doesn't stop the contracting or spread of a disease, what it does is lessen the symptoms, supposedly. I would say what you basically have is an injectable Tamiflu at best.
Ah. Well, there's that. And then there's the other aspect of this. Now, once we get away from just the physical element, the problematic misrepresentation of the, let's call it again, a treatment, once you have that out of the way, then one has to look at how this has been handled. This is going to get ugly, folks, because here's the things that I keep trying to talk about, and quite frankly, you know, it's very difficult. I have, you know, two older children. They chose to get themselves vaccinated. They both also now gotten sick with variants and all that kind of stuff. And they're recovering. They're young people. They're doing okay. But my youngest, not touched by any of this or any other vaccine. Guess what? No COVID. Anyway, we have a difference of circumstance here. But there has also been this problem of, well, you can't go see your loved one in the hospital. You can't go to the retirement facility where there are some older people because of quarantining and et cetera, et cetera. You might be able to retrieve the body of a loved one when they die, whatever they died from. But perhaps you can't even attend a service. There has been a great deal of social engineering here.
Yeah.
And it goes far beyond the social distancing. People have literally gotten trapped in situations, and thankfully, most of the people that I know have escaped them one way or another, and survived. However, I am also told secondhand a lot of stories now about people that wound up in circumstances nobody knows what happens. The guy who did the show just before me had a mentally challenged brother who went into the hospital for a different reason. Was diagnosed with COVID and was dead in a few days. And I've heard this story not just from him, but from others who, not necessarily a mentally challenged brother, but say someone who is elderly, their parent, their uncle, a neighbor, whatever. And this has gone on, and people are left without closure, without being able to say goodbye. And things like this, and I know this is an area that you've spoken to as well, so I'd like to just hand it over to you to talk about this, please.
Sure, Chuck. And that is what I've become expert at doing, is helping families and patients either to avoid or escape the hospitals. What you're talking about is essentially that the hospitals have become prisons at best, death camps at worst. If a patient goes in and somehow is detected as quote unquote, having COVID, whether they actually do have it or not, the patients are moved to a COVID ward where they're told if they don't accept remdesivir and the possibility of a vent, they will have no chance of living. Most of the patients are terrified, still trusting a medical system to do what's right. I feel like it's fair that the patients and their families are thinking that they're going to receive good care. We live in America. We've had some of the best healthcare in the world. Unfortunately, that's not the case anymore. And these patients end up downcycling through what is essentially a poison. Remdesivir is a dangerous medication that's proven to be fatal at least 53% of the time in previous trials. The patients then end up taken away from their families where they can't see them for at least 21 days. They are deprived of food and fluid, terrified, isolated, and they end up declining and ventilated, and they do die. Since September, I've been trying to help medically rescue these patients out of the hospital or help them get connected with effective evidence-based care out in the community to avoid the hospitals, even up to and including getting them oxygen or IV medications at home so that they don't go in. What's even more upsetting about the scenario is that the hospitals are effectively being paid to do this. They get large financial bonuses for each step of the way. So the patient has a COVID diagnosis. They get a kickback for that. The patient takes remdesivir. They get financially rewarded for the doses of remdesivir, the vent, another, up into including the patient dying with a COVID diagnosis in the hospital, can award a hospital through CMS up to a bonus of $100,000.
Now, I've heard about this. Do we have some sort of publicly observable proof that
absolutely.
Well, can you tell us about that, please?
Absolutely. The listeners can go check out the documents for themselves at CMS, Centers for Medicaid and Medicare. It's all documented and proven. It's publicly available information that these payouts will be made to the hospitals for these diagnoses. If they want to understand the waiving of the patient rights, how families can't have access to medical records or to see their loved ones, they can download the PREP Act and the CARES Act and read for themselves how hospitals have been given complete waiver of liability for the outcomes COVID patients suffer in the hospital.
Now, does this...
Effectively, at this point,
yeah,
the federally protected patient bill of rights has been crushed where it comes to any patient that receives COVID care in a hospital. They have no rights.
Well, you called it crushed. I think it's been eviscerated, but we won't quibble over terms, will we?
No, we won't.
And here's the thing. It is publicly observable that this is going on. And one would ask, why? And I say that it may have something to do with this. Look, there are a certain amount of dollars which are also allocated through the Medicare fund for each shot. Yes. You know, those free shots that they're offering, you know, you go to Walmart or whatever and come over here, get your free shot. I went to a grocery store where they had that on a loop, you know, some weeks ago. We have free shots. Come get them. I found it very, very dystopian and very, very brave new world of them to be doing this in that store. But again, I'm one of these people who was always skeptical of the medical establishment to begin with, because quite often I've seen some bad outcomes for people that you didn't expect. You know, somebody goes in to get a hip replaced and they don't make it out. Things like this have happened repeatedly to people I've known personally. So I've always been a little skeptical anyway. This confirms my skepticism to be proper, because an entire industry that, again, is supposed to be, according to the ethos of Hippocrates, not to do harm, appears to be doing harm. I mean, am I wrong about this?
No, you're not. They're derelict in their duty. They're failing to uphold their oaths. And it's truly diabolical. We've been blessed to be in a country where we really have had access in a lot of ways to some great care. We went astray a long while ago, both in our institutions of learning and in the systems themselves, that we have conditioned the people to not ask questions. We've basically conditioned them to learn helplessness, not to ask questions, not to do their independent learning, thinking, critical evaluation. They just do what the doctor says. And the doctor does what the system says. Mm. No one's actually critically thinking anymore at all, which is why we're in the situation that we are. These physicians and nurses, medical personnel in these hospitals and facilities, they're responsible to become educated and informed about the care that they're giving. And if any of them took time to go beyond what the system tells them to do or they'll lose their job, they would find out very quickly that what they're doing is it's evil, Chuck.
Right. Look, that's about as best as it can be said in any way, shape, or form. So before we run out of time in this hour, because we've got another 25 plus minutes, I want to turn to this issue, because not only are the patients ill-informed, but apparently the medical practitioners, and I'm rounding them all up, are also ill-informed. So does this begin with the education of the medical professionals? I mean, is that where the issue is? Because I got to tell you, just in 60 seconds, one of the issues I had when my third child was born and they wanted to stick him with some vaccines, I had a serious argument with the pediatrician and, wound up eventually telling him that, you come near him with another needle, you're going to require security. And you're going to require security from me. The thing was that the argument was over hepatitis B and vaccinating him for that. And I said, look, if I can assure you that my infant is not going to have unprotected sex, get a tattoo, or utilize intravenous drugs with a dirty needle, I'm really thinking that he doesn't need a Hep B vaccination. To wit, the doctor said, I don't disagree with you, but it's on the schedule. And mm-hmm. then I said what I said, which is, yeah, you come near him again, you're going to need security. And that was that. But, not every story ends that way. And so that's a rewind on something we were talking about earlier. But let's get to this. Is there something about the education of that doctor or the doctors that are in practice right now? There's a cardiac nurse I know personally who's a neighbor right now who, is just quite a bit on board with all of this. Can't figure out how it is she got so sick after getting her mandatory injections and all that. And I keep wondering, well, why don't you read some of this stuff? Why don't you look at it for yourself and understand what you're putting in your own body before you're also pushing this very same thing to vulnerable patients? And I sound like I'm crazy, don't I?
No, you don't sound like you're crazy at all. The higher levels of learning, and I would say this isn't universal for every single student, right? But the drive is towards plans, protocols, and procedures, right? Symptom management. Don't ask questions. Just follow this protocol. And these symptoms mean this pill. And this stage equals these treatments. There's no individuality, subjectivity, or critical thinking that goes into it. It's very cookie cutter. And that's happening whether you're a student or whether you are a consumer of healthcare services. I say the country needs a major wake-up call to becoming a well-informed consumer of healthcare services, which basically means we're buying a product and we should know what we're buying and have a say over what it is that we are investing our resources into. If you don't want your newborn infant to get a hepatitis B vaccine that has no bearing on his life whatsoever, you shouldn't be challenged about it. It should be a simple no, and it's a reasonable no, because you're a well-informed consumer of a healthcare service, right? Mm-hmm. That's not what you want to pay for. You don't want the shot. And you shouldn't have to defend your position for your child not to receive it. But that physician has been conditioned over years of time. This is a plan, protocol, and procedure. The baby gets the shot before the baby leaves the hospital. They are programmed.
Right. No, and
it's no longer an art and a science.
Right. And mind you, I did not argue with clearing his eyes and using an antibiotic in his eyes because I thought that made some sense. He was, you know, brand new, right? Just cleaned up. And I didn't argue with everything, but this particular thing didn't make sense to me. So what I'm saying is, let's adapt that to the current situation. If somebody really objects to this because they feel as you do, that this is not, and by the way, I'm not challenging you on this. This is not a vaccine, okay? This is something that could be dangerous, especially given what we know about the nanotech that's involved and this idea about generating a spike protein. And nobody has the long-term study on exactly what that does, even though these things were studied for a while. I say again, nobody knows really what it would have done in a population. However, it was authorized under emergency use, which gave it special protections. Again, you know, you can sue them over the opioid overdoses, right? You can sue them over the baby powder that gave people cancer. You can sue them over the catheters that, actually destroyed people's urinary tracts. You can do that, but not over this, because first of all, it was authorized under emergency use. Secondly, they call it a vaccine. So what are you going to do when these things do go wrong? And by the way, things are going wrong. And I'm not even saying that we have all the information regarding correlation and causation. It's just that we do have enough information, in my mind, to question this at the very least. Or again, do I sound like just, you know, crazy conspiracy theorist to you?
No, not at all, Chuck. A principle of patient rights is informed consent. And that is supposed to be given before any medical treatment. The onus of responsibility is on the medical professional to provide informed consent to a patient. As much as I'm a medical professional, I'm also a patient. I'm also entitled to informed consent. And in the case of the shot, there was sufficient information to give informed consent. No, we don't have population data. That's true. And it's fair to say, I want to see some. But we do have 20 years of data on what happens when you give a messenger RNA shot to a living being. The answer is the test participants all died. So if you have 20 years of data that says you could never try this in a human population because the animal test participants in clinical trial stage phase 1 and 2 died from taking a messenger RNA shot, why would a participant not be given that informed consent that this could be a risk of taking the shot before they get it?
Well, here's a counter question to that. Would it even matter? Considering the fact that the majority of people, not the people listening to this show and preaching to the choir mostly, but the fact is that the majority of people I encounter have lost the capacity for critical thought. Now, mm-hmm. on the one hand, we could say the education system has not encouraged this in general, and it's got nothing to do even with going to the college level where you are, but even in the primary, you know, where you have been, excuse mm-hmm. me, but even in primary schools, they don't encourage anybody to question these things.
No.
And not just medical or scientific or biochemical issues, anything. You're not supposed to question anything, which is a key element in thinking critically, making evaluations, mm-hmm. right? So they don't question the media. So they don't question the general consensus, the social norms that are being put forth, unless it invades something else they were previously taught, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, for instance, you mentioned fetal cells, and that may be an issue for some people. And it might be based on the fact that they feel it is a violation of natural law to do this. On the other hand, somebody else might see it a different way. And I have respect for both positions on this. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. But the thing is that when people do not have the capacity to analyze this in the first place, it doesn't even matter if you inform them as far as consent goes. Because, again, there is this default position. And now this may sound a little offensive, especially to somebody who, you know, worked for 30 years in there. But I'm sorry, a white coat does not buy you authority, in my mind. And I don't care if it's, you know, and your nurse's scrubs don't do it either. Okay.
That's right.
That does not buy you authority over what I choose to allow into my body and also, by extension, my children's body. So the thing is, I have never quite understood this. And it's just one of those unquestionable things where, you know, like people don't even question where their money comes from either. Another issue. But the point is that it's almost like, well, let's default to trusting the medical people. And that's why, you know, a Dr. Lena Wen is out there who I cannot stand, even her speech pattern, to be honest with you. You know, and Fauci and all these other people are out there, doctor this, doctor that. Trust them. They're the authorities. And, you know, even trying to question, even when a mainstream media person tries to question their motives, okay, or maybe the drug company telling you that you need to go get your vaccine might have an ulterior motive outside of, oh, I don't know, public safety and the general good for the population. You do that anywhere and you get shut down. I'm expecting that this particular show, the second I post it to certain platforms, it'll be knocked off in about 5 minutes. I know it'll persist on my website, but I own that for now. But I know that just this discussion alone, you know, automatically will be disqualified from distribution in certain places. But we're going to get it out as far as we can. So I appreciate your patience with all this, regardless of how far it gets. But
so
again,
I want to speak to your thought there, Chuck. And the answer is that I agree with you. The American populace has been dumbed down over years and years of faulty education that has been built upon the premise of input output versus the exposure of an individual to genre to allow them to develop their skills and gifts and critical thinking as they explore the world around them. It's a fundamental difference in the understanding of education, and it's been at play for at least 100 years in our country. And you're absolutely right. Still, I would say to you, as a medical professional, when I took that oath to serve the public, the onus of responsibility falls on me and falls on each and every licensed medical professional to take the time to understand what it is that they're actually doing and then provide the information needed to at least give the person a chance at making a choice. If I came to the average person and said, hey, this shot here was made by Moderna. Now, Moderna's never actually made a successful product in over 10 years of being operational. And any other time this messenger RNA has been used, it's killed the participant, but it might help keep you, based on some early data, from getting as sick with COVID. I would say most people, even without being able to critically think, would probably say, I think I'm going to wait.
Well, at the very least, you're entitled to make a cost-benefit analysis, right?
And yes. So they've been deprived of their ability to make, to even be, I guess what I'm saying is, when the medical professional doesn't inform the individual, even if they lack critical thinking skills, you are dehumanizing that person to have no worth or value whatsoever, that they don't even have the opportunity to hear the information. You're robbing them of their personal worth and value. Mm. And that's criminal.
No, absolutely. And look, in the next hour, I'm going to talk to somebody else who has had experiences recently where I don't know how much he's going to get into because he tells me some things personally. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what it's like to be confronted with, the mandates, with the requirements. We're going to talk about that a little bit. And I'm actually hoping that you'll be able to stick around with us for a little while. in the second hour, but with the last 15 minutes here in this hour, I would like you to speak to whatever it is that you think is very important in this discussion that we did not get to, because again, I recognize my questions might have been a little all over the place, but I wanted to make sure I covered some of these very key points with you as objectively as possible. And by the way, you're informing, you know, the people that listen to this show, and I appreciate it and appreciate your time, and your careful thought process, and also your desire to actually honor an oath, which is something that is extremely important to, well, me personally, but it is important to societal contracts. Okay, when people take on a responsibility. Whether it is to be a firefighter or a medical practitioner or a judge or whatever else, I think they absolutely must adhere to the not only the spirit but the letter of the oath they take. And even though I may not be somebody who chooses to take one of those oaths, or I might be, in fact, I would say that it's very important to engage with people that are actually honoring their oath and not simply taking orders from the establishment, which, by the way, might be in part bought and paid for by the very same companies who are profiting off of whether you live, die, or what. And guess what? We just explained here in short order that, look, no matter what your outcome is, there's money to be made off of you. And I do mean you, the listener, not you, Nicole. There's money to be made off of you. And you die, you get the shot, you live. Either way, you get the shot, you die. I got to tell you, either way, there is profit to be made. And as soon as that comes into the equation, skepticism is a requirement. You are obligated to have some skepticism about the mechanisms that are delivering this and are offering it. So
absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, Chuck, all public servants in their oaths, these are of the highest importance. You know, you are a public servant. You are disseminating information to your listeners, and you fall into the same category as me. And those oaths are to be taken seriously because you are reaching out, communicating, and participating not only in the populace, right, but each and every one of us is made in the image of Almighty God. We each have worth and value. And when a public servant takes an oath to do no harm, that's of the highest order. So I absolutely agree with you. There's a lot of medical professionals that aren't doing that today. There still are a lot that are. And I want to give credit to those that are. We're few and far between at this point. We need to stand up, and the public, sadly, is going to need to come to grips with the fact that not all their medical professionals, not all these public servants have intention toward their best and their good. I think there's a lot of cognitive dissonance out there, but this has gone on far enough and for too long, and there's more than enough data out there that they can get informed and they have a responsibility to, because their job is to protect and serve the public. You know, there is a lot of information out there about how to safely and effectively treat COVID without the use of a shot, an experimental shot. And I have watched thousands upon thousands of lives be saved around the world and in our country, and I've participated in a lot of it. I've brought patients back by getting them connected with safe and effective care that the hospital told them they were going to die. And guess what? They are at home with their families today. That's the kind of trust I want from the public that I took an oath to serve. And I'm sure you feel exactly the same.
Well, what I've always found is that reliable medical practitioners, in my mind, are individuals who understand first and foremost that there is no one-size-fits-all solution for everyone. That is a huge red flag when I see somebody just go, well, here's the procedure, and that's it. It's not necessarily true, and I've only ever been able to function. I mean, if you knew my history, you know that I've functioned at certain points as a battlefield medic. not necessarily in a war zone, but maybe in a war zone near you. you know, and the thing is, I mean, I know how to set a bone. Certainly, I know how to stitch things up. Stuff like this, I don't claim to be, you know, a medicine man exactly. But the point is that just knowing some of those basics, I happen to know that every situation is a little different.
Yes.
And I've experienced this as well with people that, you know, can take certain medications, people that can use certain natural remedies for things, and others who cannot. Mm-hmm. For instance, I have a you know, it's sad, but I have an allergy to coconut because coconut oil indeed could be helpful for a lot of things. But I can't use it. Okay. And it, like I said, there's no one size fits all for anybody. And I think that's an important element here that is being missed as this agenda is being pushed for this one size fits all. Here you go. Don't look at the data. Please don't look at what the company who developed it had to say. 'Cause even they told you, it's not preventing the disease. It's not stopping the transmission. I don't know what the point of it is. Again, doesn't qualify as a vaccine to me. But, you know, what am I doing but reading the definitions they gave us, okay? So either way, this is problematic. And the whole system has now turned on its head, in my opinion, even though there were problems before. And the for-profit system we have is problematic in general. It has been exacerbated by the past 2 years, and I am absolutely horrified. And quite frankly, I love the title of the article that was sent to me first about you, which is, you know, the key in surviving COVID-19 is to stay out of the hospital. It seems like the key to surviving at this point in time might be to stay out of the hospital, because I'm telling you, I don't trust the hospitals near me. I don't trust the hospitals I'm hearing about. I don't trust the people that are in them at this moment, you know, in general. And I do know that there are good people out there who are trying to fight the good fight, who are trying to adhere to their oaths, but there's not enough of them in my mind.
No, there are not enough. And we need to inspire and encourage more to stand up. Where it comes to COVID-19, I can say unequivocally, if you get it and you want to survive, don't go to the hospital. They are going to kill you there. They have a one-size-fits-all solution that involves a very toxic medication and a ventilator. Neither one of those things are needed to treat and cure COVID-19.
And just to let you know, there's an individual in my chat room who I also know works in a hospital. Not going to tell you what he does, but I do know, who is saying that he really appreciates the way you're articulating these things, and he wishes he could do it as well, quite frankly, because...
Well, hey, Chuck, you can, he's listening, and thank you. You can get in touch with me at Truth for Health Foundation, and we will give you a way to do just that.
Right. Truth for Health Foundation. What is the website before we close out this hour? And also, I'm going to provide a link to the podcast that I mentioned with that title, you know, in the show notes here. And I might have some other things to provide in the show notes for people to go and get some information regarding all of what we've discussed, and anything that you choose to suggest to me, I will add into the show notes as well. But please go ahead and tell them about the website and what you do over there again, please.
Absolutely. Truthforhealth.org is the web address for our site. We're a 501c3. We are a public charity serving the community for evidence-based scientific education on health-related topics. We've been very focused for and throughout the pandemic on COVID-19, but we have lots of other goals and educational material as well. Our medical board is headed up by Dr. Elizabeth Valit and Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Harpal Mangat, and a host of others who have participated and served us in guiding the ship into a direction that hopefully the public will be able to instill trust in us that we honor our oaths and intend to serve the public for their good and for their health.
Exactly. And again, I put it in the chat room, but it'll also be in the show notes, truthforhealth.org. And that's all one word, truthforhealth.org. That is the website to go to. And they do have resources, not just about this, but about other issues. And as you said, these are qualified medical practitioners who are being responsible about information that they're disseminating. And I think it could be helpful to people in their personal situations. So I'd like to encourage you guys to follow up. And even if you're not reading my show notes, truthforhealth.org is the website to go to. And what is your position there again?
I am the foundation nurse advisor. I also am director of the COVID strategy team, which is a medical team. We consist of volunteer physicians and volunteer attorneys that work on strategies, essentially, really truthfully, to get the patients out of the hospital where they can get care at home. In cases where we cannot get the patient out, we try to advocate alongside the family and with the medical staff and the facilities to try to get the patients the best possible care.
Is there any state in which you don't try and assist anything like that in the U.S. or are you guys barred from anything?
We help patients in every state. There's an intake form on the website under COVID strategy team that someone can fill out if they need support. I do advocacy for other health related issues in addition to COVID. It's becoming more and more needed, and I'm always available. I can be reached at nicole.landers@truthforhealth.org. I'm happy to help. It is a free service to the public to have advocacy support. We live on the donations that are sent into the foundation.
Fair enough. So definitely we got all those details, and I urge you to contact Nicole. Now, I don't know if you want to stick around for the next hour, but either way, we're continuing this theme and discussing what is actually happening in the medical industry regarding this circumstance for sure. And with a guy who I actually have come to trust over time, I'll let him explain it, but he's basically one of those nurse practitioners. I don't describe exactly where he works or anything like that, because again, I don't want him to suffer backlash for some of the things that he said on my show. And quite frankly, if he were living closer to me, I would probably have him as, even though he's not the doctor, I would call him my family doctor. He's that good of a guy. We call him Captain Trips. And if you're willing to stick around and talk with him a little bit, I'd really appreciate it. But if not, I understand and appreciate the hour that you've taken with us, Nicole. It's really important to get people real information and a way that they might be able to advocate for themselves or get assistance in advocating for themselves in this very, very troublesome time where, quite frankly, people are, in my mind, being harmed and manipulated and herded by the medical industry. There must be a responsible way to deal with this, and I thank you for taking your time.
You are most welcome, and I'm happy to stick around for a while longer.
Excellent. So we're going to do that. We'll take a short break here on the Ocelli Effect. In the next hour, Nicole will be joined by Captain Trips. We all know Captain Trips, and this is going to get interesting. I just want to sit back and let them two talk, actually, a little bit, and who knows what might come of that. The Ocelli Effect will continue after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Revelation through conversation. The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're tuned into the Ocelli Effect.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to Larry-Hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at Amazon.com in digital or physical form.
Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Second hour of the Ocelli Effect begins now at Ocelli.com, but you could be some other time, some other place, and no matter where you are, when you are, who you are, we appreciate you for listening. So, this show probably will not make it far and wide, I gotta tell you, because I said some things that I know are gonna get struck from some of the major platforms already. And also did my guest, Nicole, great stuff in that first hour, and really pleased to have you hang around, because I have my friend with me, Captain Trips, who is also a medical practitioner, specifically more like a nurse practitioner. So, you know, one of those steps in between nurse and doctor, sort of, right? That's the way I always categorize it. It's probably an oversimplification, especially because of some of the specializations that he's in. Now, I don't talk about where Captain Trips works. In fact, we don't use his real name on the show because I don't want him to suffer any backlash professionally. Do appreciate you for joining us tonight, sir. And also, Nicole, for hanging around. I'd love to hear what the two of you have to say regarding the circumstance that's going on. I mean, Captain Trips, I mean, you and I have been talking about this since day one. Not always on air, but, you know, since day one of the new COVID, the post-COVID reality. You know, the second they started saying this was the big problem, right? And what's going to happen to the hospitals, et cetera, et cetera. So, you're still working in hospitals at the moment.
I am still working. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm still working. I mean, without going into my specific institutions, I will say I'm in a very large urban northeast exclusively children's hospital, which I have been affiliated with now for 16 years.
Okay.
One of our sister practices I'm doing some work for, I am literally just a few weeks away from relocating to what seems to be one of the only sane states left in this country. I won't say which city in Florida I'm going to, but I have accepted a position and discussed this whole thing with them, and they said no. The original one was it, and they're done. And everyone I've talked to in Florida now, about this is pretty much on the same page. They're pretty much all sick of it.
And for the record, just really quickly, you did submit mm-hmm. to the initial vaccination. Begrudgingly.
I felt kind of pushed up against the wall, and Chuck knows my personal situation. I'm married. My wife is unfortunately chronically ill and unable to work, and I have an 11-year-old and then two older children. So at the time, I kind of thought, all right, I'm just going to bite the bullet. I wouldn't go anywhere near this Pfizer monstrosity. So I took what I thought was the lesser of all the evils, which was the Johnson & Johnson one, and I didn't really have any problems with it. But, you know, the more I look into things and the more I think about it, I'm firmly convinced that not everybody that gets a needle in their arm and some type of fluid injected is actually getting these vaccines. Hmm. And the reason I say that, and Nicole, you can probably jump in because I'm assuming you've been following this as closely as I have, you know, at the end of Pfizer's so-called phase 3 trial, they went and completely blew the study by unblinding it. So they really have no firm data to make any conclusions, since they offered the placebo group, they offered them all the shot. But I'm still thinking that someone somewhere really does want to know, does want to see a control versus an experimental group. And I really do think that the reason why some people are taking it and having absolutely no problems at all, and then you have people that are dying from it and being left permanently disabled, is because some people literally got a saline shot and didn't know it.
That's exactly right. And the listeners can go to howbad.info and look up the batches and find out mm-hmm. there's an absolute ebb and flow to it. Some people definitely got saline while others got what is a lethal dose. And we should all do well to remember that this is an experiment. They unblinded mm-hmm. some of the original test participants to skew the data, but the experiment does go on.
You know, I think I look at it. I look at it as a, look at it as someone who's, you know, keeping two sets of books. Someone wants to know. Somebody wants to know the real data. They just don't want everybody to know it. Mm-hmm. And so the only way to really do that, since, you know, like you said, they unblinded the study, and they, I mean, by any research standard, they completely blew it. But somebody somewhere really wants to know. And I really think that that, you know, I think I got lucky and just got a cc of saline in my arm. Maybe. And I'm hoping that's the case, because I literally had no problem at all, nothing at all.
Well, Nicole, I actually have
captain trips, and you're going to join me down here in Florida, because
is that where you are? Great.
Yeah, I left a major healthcare system in Baltimore, Maryland. When they told me I was going to get the shot, be terminated, or I could be considered for religious exemption, and I prayerfully decided that I was going for the resignation option.
And, I wanted to.
Yeah.
I wanted
to. Oh, understandably so. And God was very good to work out the circumstances he did for me. But my family elected to pick up and move to Florida at that time. I can't wait for you to get down here. You're going to love it.
Oh, well, you and I, we'll have to connect off air. Absolutely. But yeah, definitely interested. And yeah, you're coming from my neck of the woods. Yes. I live not far from Baltimore. I'm a little bit further south.
So I know further exactly south, closer where to Annapolis. You are. And if you're licensed in the District of Columbia, my very, very good friend, Sister Dee Dee, Dr. Byrne, just had her license suspended by the District of Columbia.
I believe it.
She filed lawsuit, and they reinstated her temporarily until September. Sister Dee Dee Byrne lost her license because she wouldn't vaccinate. Mind you, Sister Dee Dee is a...
I know who... Wasn't she just on...
Yes.
Was it Tucker Carlson or someone? I know she was just on a major network.
She was on Laura Ingraham. And,
that's what it was, okay.
They, without giving any explanation, refused her religious exemption.
Sister Dee Dee
is a nun, and all of her medical services, she's actually a retired war veteran colonel in the Army, who served in Afghanistan, a family practitioner, and a surgeon who donates 100% of her medical practices for free to the underprivileged and undocumented.
Oh my Lord.
So,
you know, I still hold this woman who thinks she's the queen of DC in contempt. But I kind of stepped back a little bit and I thought about it. It just kind of dawned on me. I said, you know, as much as I dislike her, and I don't let her off the hook for anything, but it kind of struck me, you know, DC being a federal district, She's a mayor, and she's not even the mayor of New York City or L.A. I have to think that these officials, we'll call them, in the government of the District of Columbia, are probably having their strings pulled from above somewhere else.
Oh yeah,
because D.C. they will not stop with this booster mandate. Despite Maryland pulling back, Maryland pulled back. Virginia, when they elected Youngkin, he pulled back immediately. But then even the governor of New York, of all places, has pulled back. Now, I haven't heard about California. I'm assuming that he's not pulled back. But it was really telling when the governor of California, who was really on the bus for this, came out and said, we won't be able to staff our hospitals. And DC, they're dying. The nursing turnover is just, I've never seen anything like it. Now, I'm not saying all of these people are leaving because of the vaccine. I know some of them are. A lot of them have just been nurses who are sick of it and, you know, figuring, hey, if I'm going to do this kind of work, I'm going to go travel and make three times what you people are paying me. But they're forcing this at a time when the staffing is at such a critical point, you know. And I know these hospital officials have to know. And it just makes me wonder, is someone somewhere just trying to really drive the final knife into the medical system?
Well, see,
no, it's on life support. Yeah. As it is.
Some tricks. I'm going to confirm that for you. That is a sink. You sunk the ship. That's exactly correct. Mm-hmm. I'm in and out of hospitals. Now, this is all by, you know, telephonic communication. Sure, sure. I don't obviously travel the country, but I do advocacy services all over this country, and I'm in and out of these hospitals as a result, and they are crashing. They are literally mm-hmm. on life support.
Yep.
And the reports I get from all over, as much as 60% of the hospital staff are actually agency travel, and most are not vaccinated because the unvaxxed just flipped to travel positions and off they went.
Mm-hmm. That is exactly it. I mean, I'll tell everybody what I mean. I'm a neonatal nurse practitioner, and the unit I'm in is extremely specialized, and extremely high acuity. And there have been nights where, you know, they're calling for 37 to 40 nurses, and they have 28, 29 that are actually our NICU nurses. And they're pulling from the PICU, and they're pulling these travelers, and it's horrible. It's just I have to laugh because, you know, out of one side of their mouth they whine and cry about patient safety, and then they intentionally sabotage patient safety.
I mean, how absolutely deplorable to utilize untrained, you know, nurses. You cannot do that in a specialty unit like a NICU. It can't be done. It's completely unsafe.
Yep, it absolutely is. I mean, thankfully, the only thing that saves the particular unit I'm in is that our population includes what you would consider NICU, but we also take babies that in most places would end up in the PICU. So we do admit, we will admit directly from the emergency room, whereas most NICUs won't. And we keep a lot of patients, up to a year, sometimes even longer. So we do have a cohort of patients that a PICU nurse is in fact qualified to take care of. But, you know, we're getting NICU travelers who, I mean, I don't know, these nurses might have a year of experience in some small level three NICU, and they're coming into the big leagues.
Let me interrupt here to ask both of you a question. And I want to start with Nicole because she's going to be leaving shortly.
Okay.
And we'll go to a quick break when she does. But and a very quick break, by the way, like 2 minutes long. But the thing is, I want to ask both of you this question and start with Nicole. Isn't coherent working groups important in situations like this? Because to me, when you're dealing with nursing staff, you're laughing, Captain Trips. I'm sorry, but, you know, here I am, not somebody who works in a hospital, but I've known plenty of people who have, as I've told you over the years.
Oh, yeah.
It seems to me as though this is a team effort. Okay, in order to take care of, especially if you have a critical care unit of any kind, you know, you're using terms like NICU and PICU, and maybe not everybody knows what that is, but these are special care units, and it seems to me as though a coherent staff is preferable. Okay, so I'm asking in true ignorance here, both of you, is this not being disrupted seemingly nationwide?
Yes.
And
it's a complete
and my laugh was purely sarcastic.
Yeah, no, fair enough. But Nicole, please.
It's an entire compromise in patient safety. To train a nurse for a neonatal intensive care unit is a lengthy process. It takes months and months of time to get them well prepared and really proficient at what they're doing. So floating staff, pooled staff, this equals a reduction in quality of care and a compromise to safety.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because effectively what I'm hearing from Captain Trips is that he's literally witnessing temps come in and do this work, which I understand in a moment where that's necessary. Look, you got to bring people to the table one way or another.
Yeah.
But if you're actively doing something that is disrupting the coherent unit,
Nicole. Captain Trips and I are both parents. And for any parent out there who's neonate, newborn, in critical need ends up on a unit like this, if they knew that this was happening, they'd be mortified and terrified, and yes, they should be.
Yes, they would. And, you know, to your point, Chuck, it absolutely, 100% is a team effort. I have nurses that I have worked with since I've been there. And when a certain nurse, you know, certain nurses call me and say, you know, ABC, XYZ, I can trust them. I know exactly what they're saying, and I know how to respond. And if these, you know, this group of nurses calls me and says it's okay, I trust them. I spend the majority of my night, and I said this to my direct supervisor, you know, I can't even tell you how many phone calls and text messages I get over the span of a 12-hour period. I counted one time I got something like 60 text messages in the course of about an hour or an hour and a half. And I said to him, I said, you know, I have to respond to every single one of these, because the minute I don't, to verify that it is something or it's nothing, mm-hmm. and I don't respond to it and something goes wrong, I said, that's my tail end on the line. And even more importantly, that's that baby. Mm-hmm. So it makes my job three times as hard, because I'm carrying quite a lot of patients overnight. I'm most often the senior medical staff, including the physicians that are in house. So half the time I'm getting them coming to me, asking me questions about their patients. So I'm overworked just mentally. I mean, I can do it, but you know, there's even been times where I've caught myself almost missing things. Yeah. It's frightening. It is absolutely frightening what I'm seeing in the hospitals right now and talking to people. Go ahead.
It's an incredible load to bear. And I think the other thing that Captain Trips, that you would probably speak to, is that when it's operating like this, there's not the personal investment that comes
from
regular staff that makes the thing run. It's like the fuel in the tank.
You know, I left this particular unit for a couple of years to sort of step back and take a break, just kind of go to a lower acuity. And I came back knowing that the institution was terrible. And this was all prior to this madness that started in 2020. But the people that I actually physically work with on a day-to-day basis are so good. They're all good people. It's truly a family. You know, those of us that have been around. And it's heartbreaking to see what they've done. And by they, I don't mean just the hospital I work for. I'm talking about the industry overall. It's really terrifying. And, you know, I don't even know.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine what this is going to look like in 5 to 10 years. I'm assuming it's just going to implode.
Yeah, and this is a point I danced around with Nicole on, because again, you know, she's an honest broker here when it comes to this, and so are you. So it's very difficult to have to say this to both of you, Nicole. And I'll let you leave on this note, even though it's a little unfair. You know, the fact is that in my mind, because of the corporate structures that have become involved in the healthcare industry, it was already stressed, especially in major cities, especially among people that are underprivileged. How do I know that? Because I'm one of those people that's been there on that side of it, okay? And these things have been run more, again, because of the for-profit system. I don't know what the solution is, but I'll tell you, I know what some of the problems are. It was already stressed, and adding this whole new set of standards and problems based on the virus, right, has stressed it even more. So, Nicole, before we let you go, would you say that that's accurate, or am I wrong about that? And I'll let Captain Trips answer it on the other side of the quick break, but would you speak to that? Do you think that there might have been a general sort of trajectory in the healthcare industry where it was already stressed, and this really exacerbated the whole thing?
Oh, it absolutely exacerbated the whole thing. It was already something that was choking and burning out before COVID, but 2 years of just abominable circumstances. I mean, Captain Trips can sure speak to this. The first thing they did was crash all our morale by saying, hey, here's this brown bag. We want you to put your mask in there and reuse it for multiple days. And any of us veterans in healthcare were like, what? You'd have written us up for not changing it in 30 minutes last week.
Oh, I got even a better one than that.
Oh.
But you're right. Well, I have a beard. So my particular hospital for 15 years now, I've always had to wear a Papper hood. So, Chuck, what you don't know, basically it's like a stormtrooper helmet with a clear visor.
Right.
It's a HEPA filter because technically with facial hair, you can't do the good seal. Do you think I had one throughout this? No, suddenly I was able to wear any N95. Okay. All right. Okay.
All right. Okay.
So there you have it.
It's a joke.
No.
It's truly a joke, and the part of it is it's not a joke about, you know, screwing up a widget. It's a joke with somebody's life, and whether it's a baby, a child, an adult, I don't care who it is. Well, it's disgusting.
No, you're right. So,
well, and it was the demoralization of all of us, especially those of us who've been in healthcare for a length of time. We could look at this right off the bat and say, well, first of all, our institutions have utterly failed. We've been hounded for years with, yearly reviews and continuing mm-hmm. education credits for emergency preparedness and making concept maps of how it goes up to the federal government. And you guys failed at every corner. And now you're giving us a paper bag? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
We had local distilleries that stepped up because we didn't have hand sanitizer.
Right.
Gosh.
I mean, literally, the hand sanitizer for a good 6 months, you could get a contact buzz off it because it either smelled like gin or vodka.
No, fair enough.
It was kind of funny.
There is a point to close out on, and we're going to let Nicole Landers go because she's got other things to do, but a ton of links and information will be included in the show notes, and we'll take a very quick break and continue on with the rest of the show. Captain Trips will be with us. Stick around.
Ochelli.com.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Uncle, I'll bet you remember the time when Benjamin Fulford said that the Asian Secret Society was going to dispatch ninjas to take out the Illuminati to change the entire world for the better.
That is never gonna happen. That never did.
It never did, did it?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, because there's a lot of false promises.
It's fools? I can't say more.
We better not say and be polite, but there are no false promises at the Ochelli.com radio network.
That's exactly it. Not. It's truth. The point, right to the point. And this is what I like. Straight to the point.
Ochelli.
Ochelli.com.
Listen now.
Ochelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
So we took a quick break there. Whoops. You know what? I accidentally just played another track under myself, so we'll just clear that up. Anyways, here we go. I don't usually take a half-hour break in the second hour, so what are you going to do? Anyway, it's live radio. Captain Trips is still with me. We had an hour and a half with Nicole Landers from truthforhealth.org, and really was very pleased to speak with her and have some rational discussion. And it is always good to be informed. Check out the show notes, and I'll drop some in the chat room as we go through this last bit of conversation with Captain Trips tonight, who I'm also glad could join us. Because, you know, I think it was totally appropriate to bring you on for this show, even if she didn't remain for the half hour. But it was really good to have you two talk back and forth. Because,
yeah, that's great. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm definitely going to reach out and see what I can help with.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And this has turned into a crusade for me.
Well, as it should, because you actually, you know, want to help people. This is the thing. I've got lots of negative things to say about some of the, you know, people that are clearly just profiting off of others' pain. But then again, there are individuals out there who are seeking to do what? Heal people. And I, you know, you and I have had plenty of personal conversations.
Oh, yeah.
Where you understand that, yep. that I have a solid skepticism of many things for good reason. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I'm not skeptical.
And coming from the inside, I'm telling you, you should. You
right.
should have a solid skepticism. I'm not kidding. I mean, it's you know, to be a, you know, 25-year veteran now in this field, and to see, I mean, they had problems when I got in it in the 90s, but you know, it was like Disneyland in the 90s compared to what they've done now. Every single so-called improvement that they've put in has actually negatively impact patient care. And, you know, when you look at, and I mean, not to get James Corbett here, but when you look at what they're doing with these electronic medical records that ostensibly were supposed to help us, all they do is slow my work down, to be quite honest with you. There's some advantages, I'm not going to lie, but, you know, in aggregate, I could get a whole lot more work done with a pen and an order pad, you know, than I can waiting for the computer to load, waiting for the computer to recover from a crash, waiting mm-hmm. for this to pull up, you know, having this password fail, having this happen, having this system down. And, you know, quite frankly, I think, and the reason I mentioned James was because I think that's all data collection. I think that's all they want.
I don't see how you can argue that it's anything other than data
yeah.
collection.
Yeah.
Look,
it's all data collection.
And I appreciate having access to a patient portal. I really do.
Sure.
You know, and in the old days, you'd have to go down to the hospital and hope they have your records and beg them to mm-hmm. give them to you. And, you know, it's nice to have access to some of those things. But then again, it's been problematic as well.
Yeah.
And one would say, well, look, that's what that's there for. So, you know, we could quickly share this information. And, yeah, that's always the excuse for what ends up being, let's monitor you. You know, mm-hmm. and
it's one of those dual use technologies, you can call it. Okay, I mean, let's look at Google Maps, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Google Maps is extremely accurate. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
And that's very convenient. But the flip side of that is somewhere in some Google server, they know every place you've been, how long you've been there, how fast you drove to get there. So, you know, it's for the convenience and the thing that seems to have just won over the American public has been all the convenience. But convenience at what cost? I mean, at what cost? You know, we all have these little slave devices in our pockets, most of us. You know, half the time, you know, I look at the damn thing, and if it wasn't for me having, you know, music and podcasts on it, I wouldn't even bring the thing. I've gotten to the point now where the volume is never on. When I'm awake, it's on vibrate so I can hear it go off, and when I go to sleep, it goes on do not disturb. I you know, I can't deal with it anymore. I don't know. Yeah, I think you know where I'm going with all this. It's terrible. The whole thing now. It's all come around. You know, it's all writ large. The disaster we're facing, and
right.
You know, I heard our favorite veterinarian on some news show saying, "Oh, now we need a fourth shot."
Yeah.
And I saw. Here's the only thing that the only silver lining in that is the difference between the first time the vaccination was offered, where no one knew anything about it. They were, you know, everyone was, you know, I didn't believe it because I read the stuff, but at any rate. the general population, including the general medical population, took these people at their word, and they thought, okay, fine, I'll get this vaccine, we'll go back to normal, life will go back to normal. Mm-hmm. It didn't. So when they came around with the second time, far more people were saying, hold up, no, I'm not doing it. I can imagine with the if they try to push a fourth one through, you're going to have even more. You're going to have a percentage of people that are going to go along and roll up their sleeve every single time some moron from the CDC or some idiot from Pfizer gets on television and tells them they need it. Mm. But that number is not going to change. You know, I'd have to say maybe 10-15%, maybe 20% at most.
Right.
But it's that great middle portion that's starting to wake up. And if they wake up, I mean, even if they don't wake up as completely as a lot of us are, just wake up to, hey, I don't want this. I'm not going to take a shot every 6 months or every 4 months. And, you know, the thing that I find even funnier about this, and I've raised this in many, you know, because I'm noticing more and more parents, they're just saying no to vaccinations, period. Yeah, I don't want them. And, you know, they leave it to me to, you know, they want me to, no, I'm not talking to them about it. They made their decision. That's their choice. Boom, done. Moving on. They have created anti-vaccine people. They've taken people who were so pro-vaccine that they would have sworn by them. And now, I want to go back to that, you know, what, never attribute to malice what can be easily explained by incompetence. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten to the point where I'm thinking it's got to be both at this point. You know, there's definitely malice in there, and there's certainly incompetence thrown in there.
Right.
Because I can't, at least in terms of the medical industry, just looking at that microcosm, I'm not exactly sure what it is they're trying to do. It really, like I said when Nicole was still here, I'm left with the conclusion that they're trying to speed up the destruction of a system that was going to implode anyway. Mm. But what I don't know is for what reason.
Yeah, I keep asking that.
Who's going to benefit from this? I'm not sure who's going to benefit.
That's what I wonder too. I mean, look, if I don't want to jump full on board with the idea of depopulation, which I don't automatically.
I don't either, but
it's difficult to come up with another reasonable explanation, right?
I'm left with no other choice sometimes. Yeah. You know, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck.
Yeah, quack, quack. I got it.
Exactly.
What the problem is, here's the other thing, and I wanted to ask both of you this, but I didn't get to it because the two of you, by the way, went back and forth and nullified my reason to ask questions during most of your back and forth because I was going to ask a question and you guys got to it. But one thing that I did miss is, and I tried to bring it up with her in the first hour, but let me ask you, as of late, and you know I take the Ukrainian conflict situation seriously, got fired over it, thanks, you know, so,
ridiculous.
Not going there again, forget it, we'll talk about it on Friday if people want to, but I've said enough, but the thing is, that pushed the, you know, CNN was basically the COVID news network, okay? That's all they did 24 hours a day. And every other major MSM outlet was on it all the time. It knocked COVID out of the headlines. And simultaneously, coincidentally, a lot of pushback and a lot of things happened where people are relaxing, you know, the mask mandates, the vaccine mandates. Maybe we have them, maybe we don't. There's that ruling that, everybody else might be able to be exempted except medical workers. That happened. But it seems to me like it's almost being peeled back. And some people are saying they're just pushing back a little bit to go full force once again. And I'm not sure I disagree with them. I'm not sure about this situation because I'm almost thinking as soon as, you know, the ultimate boredom sets in with the American public for sure, with Ukraine, we're going to be right back to it. And in fact, they've already signaled. They've already signaled. Well, look, now there's a variant to the variant where Omicron has
Deltacron.
Deltacron, whatever it is. I can't even keep track of all these terms, by the way. And also, there's some new strain they're saying that exists. So we may see another wave coming. Get ready for it. Fauci's already been out there. And I'm sure the CDC lady who was getting her media training has already come forth, too. I'm sure they're warming up Lena Wen in the bullpen because I haven't seen her lately.
Well, the last I saw her, she kind of backed off on everything. She was the one that was, you know, did this about face. She was one of the ones that wanted to practically duct tape the mouths of the children shut. And then about, I guess it had to be about a month ago was the last time I saw her pop up, and I heard a clip. I think it was Richard Grove on his Grand Theft Auto had a clip of her saying, "Well, we have to look at the other costs of masking children and keeping them out of school." And it's like, "Where have you been, woman?"
It was right before, and by the way, it was right before the Ukrainian conflict kicked off that it seemed like a lot of these people who had been the major pushers here turned around and said, "Look, we got to think about the other problems this is causing." Finally, admitting one of the things that people like me said right away, okay, which is, you know, this is going to be a problem. You're screwing up the socialization of a lot of people, and children especially are going to be affected, but also everybody's affected. I got to tell you, a lot of people I've known over the past couple of years have suffered. Well, I don't want to say mental illnesses directly, but I do want to say they have certainly exhibited the consequences of being stressed one way or another.
I'm not embarrassed to admit I was one of them.
Fair enough. Look,
I was one of them. I mean, I'm not going to get into too many details. I'm fine now. But I went through a pretty rough period there from old July till about probably around mid-September, beginning of October, when, you know, some things changed in my life and I started to see things a little bit differently.
Right.
But, you know, I got a good example. My neighbor is an elementary school teacher, and on Friday, she came home with all these donuts. So she's giving my wife, why don't you get these? She said, what, you gave them to me. So, you know, I don't eat that crap. But at any rate, so I go outside. I was going to work, and I saw her, and I said, "Hey, where's my coffee?" I said, you bring on those donuts and you didn't bring me any coffee. And she said, "Well, I actually brought them for my students, but they were so bad that I kept them from them." And then she went on to tell me that this 6-year-old girl hit her 15 times. And I'm thinking, a 6-year-old? Now, there's always been cases of younger children who are disturbed for whatever reason, whether it's a bad home life, whether, you know, whatever.
Yeah, of course.
But it got me thinking, because I'm hearing other stories about, you know, thankfully my youngest is homeschooled and my older two are not in school anymore. So, you know, my youngest didn't have to deal with any of this, thank God. But, you know, I hear people I work with and telling these stories about, you know, if it's not their kid, it's, you know, their friends, one of their friends. And what they've done to this generation of children is inexcusable.
Well, I mean, what they've done to everybody.
I'm
sorry. What they've done to everybody is inexcusable.
Yeah,
look,
one of
the headlines this week is they caught a guy who was just shooting homeless people. You know, like.
I heard, D.C. and New York. I heard about him.
There's that guy. And then, of course, there's all these different attacks. I mean, you know, beating up Asian people because they were calling, you know, China flu, da da da. Okay. A lot of weird things have gone on here where people are getting attacked. And people are getting into fist fights over, you know, that small piece of cloth on their face or not. All kinds of wild stuff. People are acting out, and children are going to act out just like the adults do. As a matter of fact, maybe a little more. So the idea that they were finally coming around to this might have some sort of other effect psychologically. And blah, you had to wait for the suicide rate to drive up a bit. You had to wait for, geez, you know, a bunch of people are overdosing because they're at home. And I'm like, of course they are. Are you out of your mind? This is what is going to happen. I don't see how you could even think that this wouldn't happen given the circumstances that were created. But anyway.
And you said, I remember you talking about that at the very beginning of this.
Yes.
Even before, I think it may have been before it really hit the United States. I remember you talking about just, you know, about the opioid crisis and what this was going to do to that. I distinctly remember you saying that. And, I like when you're right, but I wish you were wrong this time.
No, listen, I wish I was wrong too, but I know human nature just a bit, and I understand what's going to happen when you do certain things. Now, I realize, and I got somebody in the chat room saying, look, the lockdowns won't work again. I get that. I get that idea, and I'm with you. I don't think that you're going to have as much compliance, but it doesn't mean that they're not going to create other circumstances here, okay, where, you know, if you put the pressure on the businesses, it worked pretty well to put a lot of people out of business.
Yes, it did.
It certainly changed the look of any town you live in. that had, you know, the greater corporate entities continue to exist. You know, McDonald's didn't go out of business even when people weren't going there.
Nope, Bezos made a lot of money.
Right.
You know, these Ubers and DoorDashes and, you know, all the, you know, Targets and Walmarts. And no, I definitely don't think they're going to go the lockdown route again, because you're right. I just don't think people just wouldn't put up with it.
Right.
But what I think is going on, and I've heard this from a couple of different sources, and I think Corbett was one of them, a couple other people I've listened to. What I think they're doing is, if you've noticed, they've changed the wording. It's no longer the vaccine passport. They've now just flat out started calling it digital IDs. Mm-hmm. And when you see what they did to these people in Canada who, you know, donate $25 to this trucker convoy, and suddenly you go to the ATM machine or you go to use your card and your bank account's locked. That's what they want. Mm-hmm. That's what they want. And then, you know, now you got, you know, a couple of days ago, Biden, whatever he was drooling on television about, they want to try to get into whatever they want to do with cryptocurrency. And thank God I'm not in it anymore. But I think this is their push. I think they're going to go for. I mean, you know, I without getting on the whole Ukraine thing, but they literally took a virus and they swapped it for Putin. Mm-hmm. Putin is now the virus. Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever you think about Putin, I don't think very highly of the man. But you know how it was so seamless.
Right.
It was a seamless transition from COVID, 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 COVID to Putin, 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 Putin. And, you know, and then trying to blame the inflation on it. I'm going, wait a second. Whoa, whoa, stop. Hold the phone. I don't approve of what this man is doing. But this inflation, these gas prices, these shortages, they long predated before one Russian military person crossed the border into Ukraine. So you can't blame all this on this war.
Oh, I got really
trying to.
Yeah, I got really bad news for you earlier today when somebody tweeted out about how, you know, the oil companies are making out quite well and all that. I had to add an addendum because I was listening to and actually watching the CNN stream where they were trying to do, ready for this one, an explanation of mm-hmm. how the gas, you know, business works. Sort of like mm-hmm. I've done on this show, by the way,
yeah.
where I've mm-hmm. explained it, and they were flat out lying. They were flat out lying. And I said, it's amazing to me that these guys, they bring them on as experts. Explain to us how this works. Well, you got to understand that the reason why, because what happened, by the way, is that the $126 peak for a barrel of oil has dropped. Mm-hmm. So it dropped by about
that.
$30. And the prices yep. at the pump have done what? Continued to go up. So
they dropped here, but I think that's because the governor of Maryland suspended one of the ridiculous Maryland gas taxes. So it's gone from like $4.40. The lowest I saw was an even $4 at
okay.
one place today.
But what happens is, look, as I state, every state varies a little bit. But two of the federal taxes come together to make your 0.9. That's why there's 0.9 on every
right,
sign.
Right.
Okay. But the thing is, yes, they're also considering doing that in Georgia, by the way. But that's almost irrelevant because, again, in a high-tax state like New Jersey, it's 32.9 cents per gallon. That's exactly what it comes together as in one fell swoop each gallon when you add up the federal tax and the state tax. So let's understand you're talking about knocking 25 cents off at most in any given state, generally. Okay, California
right.
might be higher, but, you know, other places not so much. Okay. The
well,
thing
Chuck,
is...
Chuck, just buy an electric car. Isn't that what Kamala told us? To just go out and buy an electric car.
Yeah, sure. If somebody's going to give me the loan for that, maybe I'll do it. But
yes, yeah, exactly.
You know, but my point is that they're misrepresenting this, and that's going to be putting a Band-Aid on a bullet hole, okay?
Yep.
It's not going to work. The price is going up. They're saying, well, you got to realize that the oil that they're using at the pumps was bought some days ago. Some days ago? Are you people idiots? Look, even in emergency circumstances, you got a 60-day lead on the oil getting to the gas pump. Even in emergency
okay.
circumstances, the general consensus is 90 days from purchase of barrel of oil to gas pump. You understand? So 3 months is the lead you need to look at here. 2 months, even if they're trying to move an emergency thing going, where like we had the pipeline go down, like say during Katrina, and that disrupted a distribution. Even with that and expediting things and all that, you still got 2 months lead. It's not a few days ago, you idiots. And I don't mean to call you an idiot or somebody listening.
I know.
A couple of days ago. So you got to realize they're still charging more because the price in general, even though it's gone down near you because of a movement by the state, it's still ticking up nationally, which guess what? I stand by my point. The oil companies are recouping their losses.
Of course.
They're being encouraged, allowed, and everything else, not state by state necessarily, but by the general consensus of the way the oil oligarchs in America are allowed to operate. So I watch CNN lie about this and be like, ah, well, you know, you got to realize that the barrels of oil that we're being charged for right now, you know, might have been there, essentially suggesting that 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks now, since Putin did what he did over there. This is why you're being affected. And I'm like, how do you get around this lie exactly? I mean, how do you, and that's all I can say, is that they're lying to you live on CNN right now about this. It is absolute BS. And that's the funny thing, is that, again, because they're sponsored by, and this is the most direct and easy way to look at it, but there's more to it. Because they're sponsored by all of the big pharma companies, they're also not going to tell you the real deal about the products, all of them.
Nope.
And that includes alleged vaccine. So with that, Captain Trips, I cede the remainder of about 7 minutes to you. Because believe it or not, we killed that half hour really quick with Nicole.
Well worth it. I wouldn't say killed. I'm looking forward to listening to the first part of it. What can I say? I mean, other than I'm just counting the minutes until I get the Sam Hill out of the area that I'm in. I don't even know. I've made my stand. You know, to take a line from the book that this name comes from. I've made my stand. I'm just done. I'm done with the BS. And you know, I'm just not doing it anymore. I don't know what else to say. I can't quite figure out what the end goal is. Is it just this, you know, kind of whole order out of chaos? Are they just simply trying? I mean, the divide and conquer is plainly obvious. I mean, everybody that's got a half a brain cell in their head can see what they're doing there. With respect to the medical industry overall, I mean, I'm not sure what the end game is because, I mean. You know, are they trying to bankrupt the government? I mean, the government's already bankrupt. I'm not sure who benefits from this particular madness.
How do you bankrupt the people that don't actually control their own bank? Good question.
Well, there's that too.
Okay.
You know. Good point. I don't know. And, you know, as far as this just horrible war, I mean, you know, I don't approve of Russia invading Ukraine, but what makes me upset about the whole thing is that the American media would have you believe that history only began on the day that Russia invaded Ukraine. They don't want to talk about anything that we've done and how we've been meddling in that poor country for the last 30 years.
Yeah, I know.
It's you know, it's tough. I don't know if you're familiar with Scott Horton from antiwar.com, but he gave an excellent speech where he condemned Putin and everything they're doing, but he went into the backstory. And, you know, again, it doesn't condone and it doesn't make right the fact that they've invaded this country. But it didn't happen in a vacuum. It's not like he woke up one day and said, "I'm bored. Let's invade Ukraine."
Yeah, I generally personally like Scott, but would object to some of the things he chooses to accentuate, even in that interesting speech. And I would say that, look, at all times, I have a default position here, which again is not super popular, apparently. That, this idea that we need to set to killing one another for whatever the purpose is something that we should seek to eradicate. I do believe that it's possible, and but not under the current circumstances. Another thing to consider here, which nobody discusses, and you know me, right? I'm going to bring up the thing nobody wants to talk about.
That's fine with me.
You know, what goes hand in hand? Why did I bring up the whole oil company thing here while I was talking to you? Well, you see, the medical industry doesn't survive without petroleum at this moment.
The what industry?
Without the medical industry.
Oh, absolutely.
Requires the petroleum industry. They walk hand in hand together. So,
yes, they do.
Yes,
they do.
Whether it's to make
people
the plastics.
People don't realize that.
Oh, yeah, whether it's to make the plastics or literally the medicines. By the way, you can find petroleum elements in, like, any pill you take.
Just about any pill, and there is nothing we use anymore with the exception of surgical instruments that's not plastic or somehow petroleum-based.
Right.
I mean, the stupid syringe that your magic jab is coming in is all plastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think people realize. They just don't. And, you know, because I had studied the whole peak oil thing back in the early parts of the 2000s, there was stuff that I didn't even realize until I looked at you know, talk about having your eyeballs open to, I mean, at this point in time, we're like Homo Petro with all the petroleum that we have in us. But no, there's got to be a tie into that because, you know, look at all the oil that Russia produces.
Well, and here's the thing. Again, somebody recently watched and talked to me about it. They watched one of the Zeitgeist movies that I don't think they had seen before and said to me, quite frankly, how is it that the majority of people are not pissed off at the circumstances like on this planet and all the way around? Because everything feeds into everything else. And I said, well, you know, how is it that we're not in that, you know, position where there's just this majority of people realize that the system is rigged, loaded, and it definitely is not there for them. How is it that we don't have a mass uprising about it? Well, there's this little thing called continuous divide and conquer. See, if you can never form a majority for any reason, then you can never, ever challenge the minority that's in control because you are subdivided into so many different minorities. You will now set to fighting with one another. For all sorts
That's
of different
exactly
justifications.
It.
So, you know, it's like, hey, look, it goes right back to that thing I keep repeating, like, until I'm, I don't know how many shades of blue in the face. This is the purpose of it. As for the agenda, like you said, I have a hard time understanding, if it's not depopulation, how this how this makes sense, a lot of what's being done.
I don't know. I don't because, I mean, you have the boxing match that I'm pretty interested in watching that's coming up is the insurance industry going head-to-head with the pharmaceutical industry.
Mm-hmm.
Because you now have big life insurance companies around the world that are now seeing all the claims that they're getting from this stuff. And that's going to be a death match because you want to talk about two entrenched, corrupt, predatory industries, pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industry.
Yeah, the only,
I don't know who's going to win that one.
The only caveat I would give there, though, is that literally, as far as I can tell, okay, and I'm not sure that this is absolute fact, but what I can observe is that the pharmaceutical industry actually dwarfs the insurance industry. So
it probably does.
I don't think it's going to be a fair fight, and I don't think it's going to turn out. But one thing I can assure you about any of these battles between the corporatist elements out there is that people like you and me, Captain Trips, are not going to be winners.
We're gonna lose.
Right. Yeah. So either way, we lose or we're not going to be winners. Definitely not going to win. Possibly we all lose. Otherwise, you know, your experience may vary slightly, you the listener, but probably not too much.
Results are not guaranteed.
Anyway, I want to thank Nicole Landers and Captain Trips for joining me tonight. That's a Wednesday, and that's all there is to it. I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.